listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. Our next guest, well, you could introduce him in a lot of ways. I'm gonna use a couple of ways here to introduce him. He's a former U.S. international. You know him for scoring the first ever goal in Major League Soccer history for the San Jose Clash. Hall of Famer, played in three World Cups, scored that spectacular goal in the Pontiac Silverdome in 1994 off the free kick against Switzerland, played in Germany. He is Eric Winalda. He is now the coach of Las Vegas Lights in the USL. He joins us now. Eric, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, it's good to hear your voice, man. How you doing?
Yeah, it's good to hear yours, too. I've been watching you from afar and really excited about all the things you're doing and coaching. You know, I was thinking about interviewing you today, and I said, you know, I remember games that you and I called for ESPN, and I swear your body posture, you just were drawn to I was just looking at you going, he needs to be on the field. He's got to be down there. He doesn't want to be up here with me.
Now, you know, that wasn't the case, but you were onto something. I think as the longer I stayed in the booth or in the studio and talking about the game, it kept you know the idea of having more of an impact on actual results instead of just talking about them was always in the back of my head. I just had this conversation with Jesse Marsh about a couple weeks ago, and he was actually the one that challenged me and wouldn't let it go. He was, you know, the first time when somebody said, "Look, you got to coach. You got to coach." And I said, "Well, you know," I said, "No, you I'm going to push you on this. You know that's where you want to be, and I think you can make an impact." So that conversation still stuck with me. It had an influence on me making the decision to leave the booth and roll my sleeves up and become a coach.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And listen, we're gonna get into the Las Vegas Lights and you coaching there since 2018 in the USL Championship. First, let's just whip off a couple of quick questions here about the Bundesliga. What is this going to mean to the soccer culture of Germany to actually play some competitive games? You having played there with Saarbrücken and another couple of teams,
yeah, you know,
Bochum.
The culture, it's funny, I'm Jesse up again, but Jesse had a couple of months of experience in Leipzig, and it's the one thing that you're drawn to is the culture around the sport. And it doesn't surprise me that the Germans got it sorted out quicker than everybody else. It's just a country that would handle a pandemic like this and figure it out how to do something that's not going to put anybody in danger. But it was too important to the country to not get back on the field and have something that they can watch on TV and something they can get their minds off of what's going on. So it's also clearly it has a huge impact on our American players. I mean, we can feel the whole damn team that's playing in the Bundesliga at the moment. So it'll be very good to just feel like we're getting closer and closer to normalcy if we can have soccer on television.
All right, Saarbrücken and Bochum, you played over in Germany, and it was pioneering times, too. There weren't, you know, you as an American player over there and being as successful as you were, how difficult was that for you?
Well, the thing that people forget is I played in Germany in the pre-Bosnum ruling, so that there was only three foreign players allowed to be on each club, so it was just me in Saarbrücken, and it was the Yuri Savichev and Thomas Stratos, who was the Russian and the Greek guy, and me. And until the Bosnian ruling hit, there's so many, the influx of players. And I'm not saying it's easier, but it was just more of a focus was on the foreign players in my day in 92, 3, 4, 5, and 6, because you had to bring it. And being the first American, responsibility and just to carry the flag was immense. I got to be honest, I'm very proud of that because the fact that I went there and I did well, it opened a lot of doors for a lot of future players to be able to have that opportunity to play in the Bundesliga. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, that it was pre-Bosman, because I think people forget that there's a lot of people that are watching soccer that weren't even born during that time period that didn't understand that that opened the door to many others. But for you to even be over in Germany and be one of the three, absolutely incredible. We're talking to Eric Winalda, the U.S. international, now at Las Vegas Lights in the USL. Going to get to a little bit of coaching talk here in a second. I noticed there's a little trepidation from players going into these games this weekend. There have been a number of players, a small number, most of them aren't talking, but a few that have come out really concerned about how quickly this is going to open.
Yeah, I think, and that's you know, I think that that's to be expected. I think that, and I've seen some comments coming out of the EPL, and Spain and Italy, and those are all those concerns are warranted, but for the most part, I think to get back out on the field, I think the percentages are pretty high. I think a lot of the players really want to start feeling like they're contributing, to have a job, that you're not just sitting here waiting around for it to be safe. But again, the Germans are so far ahead of everybody, and the country's small enough. They'll be able to keep guys. The testing will be almost every other day, and you know the games that happen on the field. Well, I think once the games start, I think guys will start to really feel like, all right, this is my job. This is starting to feel like normal life again, and they'll realize how important it is that and their responsibility, not just to their clubs but to the country, to start establishing some sense of normalcy, so we can. We can get going down the road here. It's been a long haul. I don't know about you, but I've been in my house with five kids and four beds for 2 months since March 11th when we were shut down. So I'm kind of itching too to get back out on the field.
Yeah, I would imagine. What have you learned during this time period? I mean, I know you're doing a lot of stuff with the lights and you're doing a normal work day, but is there anything else that you may have learned out of this or skills acquired? Because I definitely have thought about some things differently. I have no problem saying that.
Well, I mean, it's a great question, Glenn, because you know, as a manager, you know, there's never enough time in the day, and you train and you prepare for training, and then you evaluate, and there's all these conversations that go on. The one thing that I have learned is a lot more about my guys. You know, being able to talk to them on a personal level, to find out what really motivates each one of them. And I think it will affect me when we get back to training every day. I think that it'll make me a better manager, in the sense that, you know, paying attention to detail, you know, it was a unique situation, of course, but we pre-tested everybody, that we recognized some frailties that some of the guys had coming in, whether it was be injuries or weaknesses and whatnot, and we tried to address those on an individual basis. And it just made us better coaches and better organizers, better administrators, if you will. I think that's the one thing that I'll take out of this, because when you get the game taken away from you, the job that you love, you recognize sometimes how much you take for granted. So, you know, when this gets back to you know, a normal day where you get up and you go to work and you get to see your team, and I think I will appreciate those moments a lot more than maybe I did prior to this situation.
Talking to Eric Winalda, the coach of Las Vegas Lights. Of course, you got some great push there from Jesse Marsh. That's a great story. I did not know that, and I know Bob Bradley has been a big influence on you. Look, as a TV commentator, you were opinionated, and I like the fact that you had a real opinion. People pushed you for the opinion. They wanted you to be the opinionated guy and that guy, because we need that in this country. Are we still thin-skinned when it comes to the media and some of this stuff?
I don't know if... I think we're in a much better place than we were when I was in the booth at times. I think that you know, maybe a decade ago, very thin-skinned. 5 years ago, a little bit better off. But now, I just feel that the sport has you know, found a space now where we can be very proud of where the league is, where MLS is, And we don't have, you know, people always, they can brush stuff off. So, and just that's probably just a part of growing up that I think we should all be proud of. But, you know, look, there's still people out there that back to Jesse again, we were joking about it. He said, you were very opinionated. I love the way you commentated. And I said, well, I got to wait till everybody that I offended to die before I can get hired at MLS. So I don't know how that's going to work. But it did have an effect on people. I think people would view it in a couple of different ways. They would either say you're bitter or you're angry or you had something against them. But I was just being honest. And you and I worked enough. And you know me well enough to know that there was no malicious intent in any of that. And if anything, it's just tough love, you know, in the sense that you just want us to get better. And you can't, I can't look at you and or look at the camera and look at American people and say, that was a great game when it wasn't. So maybe.
No, I always appreciated that about you. And the word that I saw, when I saw you, I saw passion. And,
yeah.
And you know what? I'm 100% a fan of passion because we need it.
Well, I mean, I get to do it now in a different way, you know, and it's different. My life's very different. It just is.
So have you had to change, let me just stop you there. Have you had to change sort of, okay, you know, you were the brash Eric, you know, opinionated, you had some trouble with coaches, you know, some people got offended because of things you said on TV. Have you had to, you know, polish some certain areas now and be a little bit different now as the manager, as the guy getting to know the players on the Las Vegas Lights and the guy that is the leader?
Well, when you're in this position, I mean, the irony of it is I was paid to talk. I was paid to entertain. I was to evaluate, to analyze, and then to talk about it. It's not the same job. I'm paid to listen now. My job is to observe and listen, and that's the biggest difference. I don't do a whole lot of talking at all, and that's one of the things that the people that meet me now, or players, who I scout and bring in or whatever, it's always the same story. It's 2 or 3 weeks in, they go, man, they said this about you, and they said that about you, and you're nothing like that. And I said, well, your TV persona, when you're forced to talk, it brings certain pieces out of you. But you know, for me, it was never really who I really was, in the sense that when I'm coaching, I'm listening and I'm paying attention, and then I choose my words wisely. And when I speak or when I do address something, those words are meaningful. It's not just filling in the blanks anymore.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a fantastic answer, because I think a lot of, even though, you know, when I got done playing in the leagues that I was in, ASL and all that, and then I got into youth coaching, when I got into TV, you tend to think you know everything. And you're maybe, at least in my case, I had to learn to become a better listener. So fantastic answer to that. So tell us about Vegas. What do you think the potential is there? What's the end game with the Las Vegas Lights?
Man, that's a great question. And this place is the definition of potential. I knew that because in my playing days, I had a home here, and I was introduced to the city, you know, back in 1992-3. The first time I ever made any money, I invested in Las Vegas in the sense that I bought a home here and my kids were born here. It was very much a part of. I joke because it was a tax haven. Let's be fair, because there's no state tax was the reason behind the original.
A few other guys who did that too.
But when I got introduced to this city, I loved it. I mean, I live in Summerlin, which is 25 minutes outside of the Strip and all that stuff, and it's not just a bunch of good golf courses and nice homes and whatnot. It really is a great community. And you know, my son, my 11-year-old Brayden, absolutely loves it here, and there's a big part of that. You know, I thought I'd struggle with my wife, and Amanda's an attorney, and she does a lot of work. She works here now as a state planner and tax attorney, and she, you know, it was like a 6 months in. I was like, so how are we doing? And she goes, I really like it here. It's nothing what I thought it was going to be. It's just such a great little place, and So in that sense, on the personal side, it's been great. And for the family and for us as a couple, we love Las Vegas. On the professional side, so much work to be done. Because just like any other small little town in America, or even big town, it's all fragmented. It's all over the place, different agendas. And the Las Vegas Lights have the opportunity to bring it all together and connect the dots. So that's the other part of my job, is trying to remember that our job as the Lights is to put a great product out there that people can be proud of it, but to also not forget all of those clubs and those kids and the families and the talent that is out there to give them something to aspire to. So it's a lot of work. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Fantastic. Eric, listen, thank you so much for coming on. We got to do this again because there's so much more that we could get into. And I'm happy for you. It's great to see people like you getting into these coaching positions, getting into places of influence. And I wish you all the best and all the success possible. And we'll get you on the show again real soon.
Let's do that. Likewise. Again, great to hear your voice, my friend.
Yeah, you too, Eric. We'll talk soon. Thank you so much
again. You got it.
All right, that's Eric Winalda, coach of the Las Vegas Lights. I never forget that free kick against Switzerland. That was fantastic. What an emotional moment that was. A lot of experience there. Really interesting interview with him. We'll take a break now. We're going to come back, and we're going to finally get Matt Herman on, and he'll talk some Bundesliga. Talking Foosball podcast is up next.
G'day, Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, don't forget, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. Whether you get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial construction, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, has you covered. They're going to work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. So a big thank you to John and his firm for getting soccer on the air. DaspitLaw.com. Now, we brought Matt Herman back with Billy Squire. We probably should have done the Scorpions. We're joined by Matt Herman now, Talking Foosball podcast. He is an expert on German football at Talking Foosball. Highly recommend his podcast. Matt, thanks for a little bit of alteration here and still being able to come on the program.
Oh, it's great to be here. Great to be back. And no apologies for Billy Squire. I was feeling it.
Well, let's start first here, because I'm really excited you're on the program. Let's start first here just with the positive impact and the morale side of this whole thing with the German soccer culture and how uplifting this weekend can be for the country.
Yeah, I mean, Germany is so centered around soccer, their sporting culture. You know, there's other sports that people play, there's other sports that people watch, but, you know, you roll them all up together and they are about one-fifth of the size of what soccer means to Germans. So, you know, when they are thinking about what it means to get back to normal, to get back to something a bit fun in the world of sports, soccer is what they're thinking about. So, it's going to be really weird because fan culture is such a big, big thing. It's one of the big selling points of German soccer. And to have no fans in the stadium means that that's going to be kind of a weird clash. But I think it's going to make a lot of people really happy to turn on the TV and watch their favorite team.
Talking to Matt Herman of the Talking Foosball podcast. What's done for the fans by the clubs seems to be exceptional. I was listening to one of your podcasts, and you were talking about some of the incentives that fans get and even tickets to use public transportation. Can you take us a little bit into that? Because it almost seems like nobody does the sort of fan relation thing better than the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I mean, fans are really meaningful stakeholders in football clubs. in Germany. And they are, in the sense of little fringe benefits like that, like I mentioned on the last podcast, of, you know, you buy a ticket to the game, and that also entitles you to take public transportation. Nice things like that just makes your life a little bit easier. But also, really, they, fans are sort of folded into the governance of clubs. I mean, all clubs have to be, you know, many people have heard of this 50+1 rule that means that, you know, 50% plus one vote of every club structure has to be controlled by the actual members or the fans, really. And, you know, soccer clubs in Germany just don't make any decision without taking the opinions of fans into account. And even when they do make a decision that fans don't like, sometimes fans kick up enough fuss that they're able to get that turned around. I mean, you look at what the Bundesliga has done over the past couple of years with Monday night games, which they did largely to try and, you know, expand the television window for international audiences. The feedback from the fans in Germany, the match-going fans, has been overwhelmingly negative. There's been lots of very creative protests. And, you know, as of not next season, but the season after, they're going to get rid of them. They listened to the fans, and they decided it wasn't worth alienating a lot of their, you know, hardcore support just to get a few more, you know, ratings bucks from selling games to the U.S. and China.
Yeah, it is just a fantastic league. I was trying to tell people on the morning show tonight with John Granato, who has a program called The Bench with Lance Erlein. You know, 45,000 is the average second highest attended sports league in the world behind the NFL. It is pretty remarkable. Now, canary in the coal mine, that may be what the Bundesliga is in a little bit of a way this weekend. And the eyes of so many other leagues from around the world, including all our leagues here in the U.S., NBA, NFL, are going to be on this. Nothing comes without risk. But I just had Eric Winalda on, and I've said last week, there's no better league in the world to be the ones that would be the first to dip their foot into the water. Tell me why the Bundesliga is the best to be doing this.
Well, I mean, if there's something that you can say about sort of German organizational culture, that can be corporate culture, government culture, you know, club culture of any kind, they're really into planning. They're really into doing a lot of sort of gaming out all the potential possibilities of whatever decision that they make. And, you know, not only are they good at planning, but they're also really good at following established rules. That can be, you know, a bit annoying at times if you're, you know, not a German living in Germany. But at other times like this, it can be really great because they have put together what I think is as good a program as you probably can come up with to get a sports league started up again. And, you know, if there are problems in it, they have already kind of thought through where they're going to go. I mean, for example, one sort of guiding principle that they're working with is that, you know, if local municipalities or states or whatever make a ruling saying that, you know, a game can't happen or teams can't play, they follow them. I mean, for example, Dynamo Dresden, a second division team, you know, who's threatened by relegation, they had a couple of players test positive for COVID last week, and instead of joining in with the sort of pre-game quarantine that all the other teams in the top two leagues were going in, the local authorities said to them, no, you have to go, your whole team has to go into a separate quarantine. We have to get this sorted out. We have to figure out where we're at with this team, who has it, who doesn't, before we can worry about playing. And despite the fact that really threw a monkey wrench into the plans of getting that team back underway, you know, they did it. They basically said, we got to play by the rules. So their first two games are called off. They're going to have to be made up at a future date. And, you know, there's been some reports coming out of Germany today saying that, you know, if more instances like that happen, if, you know, God forbid we have teams with lots of players testing positive and lots of games getting canceled, that just sort of, you know, snowballs. They've said that, you know, they are willing to call off the season if the situation gets out of hand, and they are ready if that happens, if the season gets called off. They're going to freeze the table where it is. They're going to, you know, declare the champion the champion, the qualifiers for Europe, the qualifiers for Europe, and the, you know, the teams who get relegated, get relegated. There will be no, like, you know, special dispensation. We'll just say, you know, we're done.
Yeah, but that also is a way of making people follow the rules, too, because you don't want to, if you're a team that's battling relegation or you're trying to win the title like Borussia Dortmund or you're trying to get a Champions League place like Bayer Leverkusen, you're going to follow the rules because you don't want it running through a team and the season being canceled and stopped.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think all these teams, you know, the teams toward the top of the table, you know, your Bayerns, your Dortmunds, Leipzig, Leverkusen, teams that are really in very good financial positions are not the ones who are clamoring to get the season started back up. I mean, they love it because they're the teams that are the most popular. They're the ones who bring in the most revenue on any given weekend. But a lot of the teams in the mid-table or lower part of the table, you know, they basically made it clear without wanting to wave their hand in the air and saying we're in trouble, that they would be in trouble if they didn't finish the season, if they couldn't get the rest of the TV money in for the rest of the season. So, you know, I think there's a lot of teams who, you know, they're going to find certain circumstances about this restart, certain circumstances about games being played in weird circumstances or potentially called off. They're just happy to be playing games at all because it means that they can keep the doors open and keep their people paid.
Talking to Matt Herman of Talking Football Podcast, I highly suggest you listen to it. It's a great listen, very, very up on the German Bundesliga. So the build-up now is we're getting closer to this, okay? We're going into Wednesday tomorrow. Do you feel a build-up in Germany through the media? I mean, is there a lot being done here to kind of push this, or is it kind of a measured approach going into Saturday with the knowledge that no fans will be at the game?
Everything feels pretty strange right now. You got a couple of circumstances that make things very strange. One being the fact that everyone knows that these games are going to have no fans, that they're going to have a very special and very, I don't know, not that fun atmosphere. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I mean, as much as I'm looking forward to watching these games go on, I'm also pretty apprehensive about how it's going to come across. I think it's going to feel kind of, you know, the Germans call these games Geisterspiele, which means ghost games. And I think the atmosphere is going to feel a little bit ghostly. There's also the circumstance that these teams are presently in quarantine. They're all being put up in, you know, hotels in the various cities that they use as their home base. They basically go straight from, you know, they'll rent out an entire floor or two of a hotel with some, you know, rec room areas and places to eat, and they go straight from there to the practice, and then they go straight back there, and they basically have very little contact with much of anybody. So even the normal buildup that you would have with, you know, players being buttonholed by journalists that they come off the practice pitch and you know, giving sort of quotes, and certain journalists are cooking up this story and certain ones are cooking up this story. A lot of that stuff is kind of off the boil right now. Like, it's strange. I mean, there's a great sense of anticipation going on in the press there, but it doesn't feel normal at all.
Yeah. Talking to Matt Herman, Talking Football Podcast. When you talked about them being isolated, they're without their families?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
How long is that going to go on? Till the season's completed?
No. This is basically they want to make sure that for this restart they have an absolutely clean bill of health for everybody. So everyone had to go into a very, very tight quarantine for a week.
A week, okay.
So, I mean, even a week is not great when you're, you know, completely separated from your family. But, yeah, it's something that they'll only have to put up with for that period of time. They're still going to have to take a lot of precautions going forward, but this is as tight as it's going to be, at least for the time being.
So, Matt, you're back in the U.S. now. Do you see this as a time maybe that a few more people and unique viewers and potential unique fans of the Bundesliga could be earned here with a lot of eyeballs from differing people on these games this weekend? Do you think that could potentially happen, that a few U.S. Sports fans will get educated by the Bundesliga and might stick with it?
You know, Glenn, I've been waiting for that to happen for a really long time. I covered the Bundesliga for, you know.
I thought you were going to say that's the most brilliant question ever asked.
I've been evangelizing for the Bundesliga for a very long time. But I don't see this particular window as providing that. I think they're going to have their moment in the sun where, you know, mm-hmm. none of the other major leagues have started back up. But I think the window where that is the case is going to be probably 2 or 3 weeks long. I think that, people are going to enjoy these games because they are going to be played at a very high level, and the Bundesliga is a very exciting league, not only in terms of atmosphere, but in terms of playing style. It's generally quite attacking, quite high scoring. But, you know, without the fans in the building, without the sort of, as you mentioned before, the extremely big fan support, the big attendance averages, the loud fans. I don't know how much people are going to be drawn to the league in a long term on that basis. I think what's going to be much more important, at least for fans in the U.S., is a different television channel taking over the coverage starting next season, which I can only hope will be better and better promoted, and will mean that fans will understand that the Bundesliga is really where the best young players in Europe are at, the best young Americans in Europe, that's where they're at. It's the league you should be watching, unless you are absolutely, you know, fixated on the highest paid players or whatever.
Yeah, it was amazing because you were describing the Bundesliga, and I'm saying, well, what's not to like about that? You're talking about the youth, you're talking about attendance, open play, a lot of goals are scored, a lot of the young talent. We've got 30-plus Americans over there playing. I mean, there's just so many things that point to Americans should be watching and supporting this league more. Is it simply because potentially more of the stars play in the Premier League and they're just better at marketing the league? Because 45,000 people per game attendance, that's the average. That trumps the Premier League. No question.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, in my view, they're really, you know, there are better players and better individual players in the Premier League. I think top to bottom in terms of the performance of actual teams, certainly on the like sort of tactical coaching level, I think the Bundesliga is every bit the equal of you know the Premier League, at least in the last couple of years. I do think it has a lot to do with promotion, a lot to do with marketing. I think it's not just that what the Premier League itself is doing. It's just there's a global apparatus that surrounds that league that has to do with an English language media, which has the most penetration among, you know, internet users, social media users all around the world. I mean, I've I've worked in enough places to know what kind of articles get clicks, and it's ones that mention, you know, transfer rumors for Liverpool Football Club and whatever it is, you know, some player for Barcelona or Real Madrid that did last week. Unfortunately,
Cristiano Ronaldo took his shirt off in his home gym.
There you go.
Matt, listen, we're up on a hard break. Thank you so much for being patient tonight. Talking Foosball Podcast, at Talking Foosball, F-O-O, it's F-U-S-S. B-A-L-L, Talking Foosball. I'm telling you, it's a great listen. And Matt, we want to get you back on again, maybe in a week or two, just to kind of recap what you've seen so far in the Bundesliga once we get going and hopefully keep going this weekend.
Sounds spectacular.
All right. Thank you, Matt. That's Matt Herman, Talking Foosball Podcast. Great stuff there from Matt. Saturday, Borussia Dortmund, number two in the table against number six Schalke. That's a couple Americans playing, Gio Reyna, Weston McKennie. Augsburg, Wolfsburg, Fortuna Dusseldorf against Paderborn, RB Leipzig and Freiburg, Hoffenheim versus Hertha Berlin, Eintracht Frankfurt against Borussia Mönchengladbach, Casey Keller's former team, I believe, Borussia Mönchengladbach, and Michael Bradley. So here's the Scorpions we were promising Matt Herman. Take a break here. The break we go to, brought to you by our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Coming up, Houston Dash, Katie Stengel, a forward who the Dash acquired in the offseason.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the program. A quick moment here for John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. By the way, Tyler, I like this. You're bringing me back with a little rat and roll. Rat. You know who likes this band? Alexi Lalas likes this band a lot.
I've been seeing that commercial with him in it like all week, so I've been trying to get it out of my head.
I'm a big Rat fan too. They were good. They've been around a while. John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, personal injury attorneys. They are the presenting sponsor of this show. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. Whether you get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, or refinery, you might drive an 18-wheeler. The Daspit Law Firm has you covered. They're going to work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. Get that representation you need. The Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, proud sponsors of Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. And then quick shout-out here for Advantage BMW in Midtown. I've driven one for years. I've leased. I've owned. Just absolutely love the drive of a BMW. Other thing I love, customer service at Advantage BMW Midtown. Second to none, Advantage BMW Midtown has you covered. Sales, service, finance, it can be done so easy. Might be the time to get a vehicle now. Not sure. Get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown. We are waiting on Katie Stengel of the Houston Dash. Talk a little women's football. She played at Bayern Munich after playing in college at Wake Forest. So we're hoping to get that phone call here shortly from them. ESPN FC has got a number of interesting things up here, including something about the Premier League and Major League Soccer players, just, you know, how badly they want to just hang out because they're just missing being around the normal ritual of going to training and that's what professional athletes are. Not being able to go to training and being alone now and kind of restrained has been very, very difficult. You're training at a certain time. You're eating at a certain time. All these ritualistic things are what build consistency for professional soccer players. So, you know, clubs are now scrambling to get people back onto the field and creating protocol like the Houston Dynamo have done. So there's a bunch of different kind of things that clubs are trying to get through here to make sure it's safe, it's hygienic, and that they can get training done. Now, I found it very interesting because Eric Winalda, you know, when I asked him what he's found out during this time period, he said he's gotten to know the players on his team better. And he's gotten to know them a little bit more personally, which I thought was very interesting because that's the exact thing that Tab Ramos had said on this program to us. Tab had said the exact same thing that, wow, I've really had an opportunity to get to know the players even better. So that was a good one. Okay, we got Katie Stengel now of the Houston Dash. She joins us now. She played her college soccer at Wake Forest. I believe she's still the highest goal scorer in history from Wake. Scored 50 goals there. Then went to played in Germany at Bayern Munich. The Dash acquired her from the Utah Royals 83 appearances in the NWSL, 12 goals. Katie, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was getting a little bit nervous here. I've had a little bit of a rough show here tonight because I gave a wrong phone number initially to one of our guests. So we've had to play catch up tonight, but we're glad to have you on. I guess the first thing I want to say to you is being a part of the German soccer culture very early and very young, how meaningful was that to you in development and just overall awareness about the German soccer culture?
I think it was huge for my development. I think going over there was a big challenge because the typical route is just going from college to the NWSL domestically. So going over to Germany was a different route, different step for me, and it opened the door to know like so much more about European culture, European styles of play, and I had no idea. I was very naive in regards to how developed the German league is over there, and so I really enjoyed my time.
So I'm assuming it was a bit of a wake-up call when you saw how big of a club Bayern Munich is.
Yeah, I think I'd always heard of Bayern, and I think that was part of the draw when I first had the option to go over there. But we ended up getting the chance to go to games in the second row, and I remember looking around just in awe, and it never changed for, you know, a year and a half of games.
Yeah, incredible. Katie Stengel joining us, Houston Dash forward. Really excited to see her play here in Houston this year as James Clarkson and the Dash looking to get into the playoffs. All right, so James, I saw a quote from him. He said that you, Katie, are going to provide tactical flexibility and you are a vital piece in how the Dash are going to want to play. How do you interpret that from those words from James? And how do you see the team playing, if we can get into that already? I know you guys are trying to just get back into training a bit.
I think that's huge. I mean, I'm really appreciative of the support already. And, I mean, we were only together for over 3 weeks or 3 days even of preseason. But speaking of James and what he wants the team to play like and just the team culture and style of play is really exciting. And I'm happy that he sees me as a big part of that. And I hope I can, you know, make that come true for him.
Is it more of a sort of pressing system, an aggressive system, proactive?
Yeah, I think especially given the unpredictability of the league and how this season's going to play out, I think we need to come out and be a very aggressive team. But I think one of the main concerns we had moving forward from last year was our defensive shape and making sure we're very organized and not susceptible to the counter. So, you know, have that aggressive pressure, but also good shape and behind the ball.
Talking to Katie Stengel, Houston Dash forward, acquired from Utah Royals FC. What was it like playing in Utah? And do you leave behind good memories there?
Yeah, I ended up loving Utah. It was an honor to play under Laura. And again, just another club on the NWSL belt, I guess. It was really cool, good experience. The girls out there were incredible. With Becky Sauerbrunn as your captain, I mean, you're destined to do well and have a good culture. So it was fun 2 years, and it was the longest I've actually been in a club. So that was nice to have some kind of stability for once.
Yeah, has it been tough being kind of nomadic? Because that's the way it was way back in ancient times when I was playing. Leagues were folding, teams were folding left and right. I do see some similarities with you know, the league getting up and going and trying to continue to sink its roots. Has that been tough at times, or is that just good things that you put in your memory bank and you plow on forward?
I mean, I think it definitely has its challenges. It's tough to pack your car up every 6 months, and you don't really know how long you'll stay at a club, so you can't lay too big a roots. But it's also rewarding because I've got to know a lot of other players in the league and abroad and just expanding that whole soccer network, and it's been enjoyable. You know, each year is a new adventure, so it's not too bad.
And I'm hearing you're really liking Houston. Okay, so you played in Australia, you played in Germany, you've played in the NWSL. Quickly, just each league, just give us a little synopsis of the differences.
Okay, real quick, let's see. Germany, I would say, very tactically organized, defense Like, it was basically a defend and counter style, but with incredibly technical players. Let's see. NWSL has been a bunch of different styles. I would say in D.C., we're very athletic and very counterattacking. Utah, we decided we wanted to play a bit more and possess. And then in Houston, we're just going to do whatever we need to win.
Wow, that was good. You're good. That was nice and quick, and that was very interesting what you just said. Katie Stengel, Houston Dash, joining us. Last one before we let you go, because we're up on a hard break to finish the show tonight. We're finishing it in style with you, Katie. In quarantine, have you learned anything because of the way we've had to conduct our lives? Have you acquired another skill? Is there anything you can say on that?
I think my goals for quarantine was to learn how to make coffee where it wasn't burnt. Or steal a few of my fun, you know, banana bread recipes, but failed all around. So still back to square one with that. But I think it's been really challenging to stay focused and stay fit, getting ready for a season where you have no idea when it actually starts. So yeah. We have learned all sorts of ways to work out and stay sharp and not get burnt out, have fun, and somehow get to know our teammates via Zoom calls and just explore Houston as much as I can through the parks and everything like that, but then also stay 6 feet apart from everybody else.
Yeah, and I heard that, you know, I mean, isn't it about just small successes every day right now?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, just maybe with, I remember there were a couple young girls we had a Zoom call with, and they had increased their juggling record, or people are doing, you know, little push-up challenges and stuff. And it's like small little victories that keep you going so that you're ready to go when we actually do get started with preseason and the actual season.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for coming on tonight. It's a pleasure talking to you. Welcome to Houston. I'm glad you're out there exploring the parks and your social distancing as well. That's important, we know. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, that's Katie Stengel, Houston Dash. She's a forward, comes from the Utah Royals. If you follow the NWSL, you know who she is. Extremely hard worker, sets a real tone, and she'll be expected to do that for James Clarkson and the Houston Dash. We're going to wrap it up tonight. Thanks to Tyler Scott, Victor Ariza, all our guests on the show tonight, Matt Herman, Eric Winalda, Marco Marich, Katie Stengel. We thank all of you. For coming on the program tonight. A bit of a bumpy start tonight, but we tried to reclaim it here. The host, we'll see if he's better on Wednesday in Austin on Horn FM. That'll do it tonight. PodcastArena.com for the podcast. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Get over to GlennDavisSoccer.com. Blogs aplenty there. Till next week, good night.
ESPN 97.5.